Hey, Kev, let's follow this trail over here. This looks like there might be something waiting down there.
All right. Hey, wait a minute. Do you hear that?
Yeah, I thought it was just me. What the heck is that?
I don't know what that is. Whoa, do you smell that too?
That's unbelievable. Hey, look.
What the?
Hey, look, those branches are moving over there.
What the heck is that?
Holy cow, is that what I think it is? Look at that thing.
Oh my god.
It's a freaking Sasquatch.
Welcome to the Bigfoot Terror in the Woods Sightings and Encounters podcast. I am your host, W.J. Sheehan, author of the series of books, Bigfoot Terror in the Woods Sightings and Encounters, 11 volumes available in paperback and ebook, as well as Audible audio format at Audible. I did it again, Kev. Audible, iTunes, and Amazon as well. And by the way, folks, I just finished recording Volume 11 in audio format, so God willing, not too long from now, that'll be out. And 12 in paperback should be going soon as well. So some interesting stuff going on here. And Kev, I'd like to bring in here as I make this little unfortunate announcement. How you doing, Kev?
All right.
Kev, you there?
I am okay. Here.
Yeah, folks, an early listener to our podcast and a fellow who has become a good friend of mine went on to his heavenly reward this past weekend. Jonathan Pitt, great man, Canadian, a really fine stand-up man. I was glad to know him for the time that we did know each other. We had many conversations together. His lovely wife, Bonnie, is distraught, as one could imagine. And having gone down that road not too long ago myself, I'm well familiar with it. So prayers for Bonnie. I am sure Jonathan is in heaven, and I actually asked Paula to greet him, to be expecting him, because he's coming.
Very good.
Bonnie, we love you. Jonathan, we love you. And now, my brother and co-host, KJ.
Yeah, and God bless Jonathan and his family.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it's a tough time. I was coming home the other day from a meeting, and I had just gone by the graveyard where Paula is buried. I came home, my phone lit up, and the message said, "Bill, it's Bonnie, call me." And I knew right away because he was sick. He had some issues that he was dealing with. We had just had a conversation 2 or 3 days before. And he said to me, words to the effect of, "Bill, I feel like it's my time to go." And he was right. So God bless him. And folks, you know, without you, our audience, we have nothing. We have a couple of guys talking it up about Bigfoot and a lot of strange things. But it's the audience that really makes the difference. We love getting your feedback. I love talking to people about what they've seen and heard. A lot of work is going into this, and we're really not asking you for anything other than to buy a book and show some support. And Jonathan came to our podcast very early on. He had a report from up in Canada about some strange goings on, and it just blossomed from there. So I'll miss him, but I know he's in a good place, and I'm not just saying it. So there you have it, Kev. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, Bill. Well, we'll get a little bit lighter now.
Yeah.
I am fresh back from some fantastic global travel. Was out in the South Pacific, which was unbelievable. Uh-huh. Went to pretty cool islands out there. One of them called Moorea, or as the locals call them, Mo'orea in French Polynesia. And then also Bora Bora.
Cool, man.
Which was pretty cool.
Yeah, some beautiful vistas and scenery around those parts.
Yeah, and had some good time in the water. Saw like more kinds of fish than I thought existed. I don't think I got to tell you yet, Bill, too. We went swimming with some reef sharks, which was pretty spectacular. I didn't know how cool that would be until after doing it, and it was one of the coolest things I ever did, were these, you know, 6-7 foot sharks would cruise right up to you, some of them 4 or 5 at a time, and look you right in the eye from like a foot away, but didn't do anything to you. So, like,
crazy, man, huh?
Real magnificent animals. So, you know, they just so beautiful. And I'll send you some pictures and some video of that, which was amazing.
Nobody tried to bite your flipper?
No, they told us, hey, don't touch the sharks, and they won't touch you.
So wow.
That was good enough for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tried to keep my hands in my proverbial pockets.
And keep your fingers attached to them.
Exactly. But, they, you know, and part of why I did it, I'm not crazy, but the water out there is so crystal clear. And these sharks are pretty mild-mannered, for sure. And because they can see you so well, there's no mistaking you for anything else.
Yeah. Yeah.
But super cool. Like magnificent animals when you're actually in the water with them, you know, eye to eye with them. You're like, oh, my God. No wonder why people are so fascinated with these creatures.
Yeah. It's amazing, you know.
Just cruising up. And then I sent you a picture of that marlin that we caught, right?
Yeah, what a beast.
450-pound blue marlin, 10 feet long.
Wow, what a monster.
Absolute monster.
I got to ask you, they were trolling for them, right?
Yeah, we were trolling with like this big squid-looking lure, mm-hmm. probably about 16 inches long. You know, with a monster hook on it.
What?
And this thing.
Well, I was going to say, what color? Fluorescent green?
All fluorescent colors. Uh-huh. Like green, pink, white, silver. You
okay.
Know, just looked like a crazy Christmas tree ornament with a big eye on it, like a squid, uh-huh. You know. And this thing hit, and, you know, those big trolling reels. And almost took all of the line off of the reel when it first
wow.
hit.
Wow. Yeah. Amazing, man.
Fantastic.
They say
I never caught, I've caught like tuna and stuff like that before, but never a big sailfish like that. It was spectacular.
Yeah, they say that the fish see shades of gray and white. I don't know how, you know, they interview a couple of fish and they figured that out.
Exactly. Hey, you know, raise your flipper if you recognize this as red.
What's red?
What's red? I think I cut that class in school. Get it?
Yeah,
school?
Yeah. You know, I've used some artificial bubblegum worms to nail some stripers. And I'm talking something that looks like a piece of bazooka, you know, bright, shocking pink. And right. People would say, like, what the freak, you know? But that's going on the fact that they see shades. So to them, this looks like some type of shade of a gray, right. Like a gray worm or what may look like a saltwater worm or perhaps, you know, an earthworm given the right circumstances,
yeah,
in the water.
The right color.
You know, so interesting.
Yeah.
So, my friend.
But unbelievable. Huge fish. And then when he's getting close to the boat, I was worried we were going to lose him. And I got this GoPro for my trip, this little GoPro camera. And folks, yeah, if you ever spend any time in the water, this thing, I got it as a gift, and it is amazing underwater. So I had it on this little, like, 1-foot-long floating stick, Bill. So I knew I could see the fish was close, so I hung off of the back of the transom mm-hmm. with my arm under the water like a crazy person that I am, and got some amazing video of this marlin right close to the boat with the lure hanging out of his mouth. getting close.
Wow.
Just
amazing. Well, you got to send like, that wow, over what, to me, man. I got to look at that.
Yeah, thing. I will. I will. I'm still downloading stuff, you know. Of course, there's not much internet coverage over there, but it was fantastic. Didn't see any cryptids. They don't have any creatures over there in French Polynesia. I asked everybody. There are some cool-looking tokens and, you know, their version of, like, a totem pole. Not actually a pole, but, like, rock carvings of some weird-looking spirits and creatures. Mm-hmm. But other than sharks in the water, the sport fish, and then the little tropical fish were unbelievable.
Yeah, I would imagine it's crazy, crazy colorations and everything else.
Oh, my goodness. Every time you thought you'd seen all of the fish by that day, then this other fish would swim up to you and be like, what the heck is that? You know, yeah. Where did you come from? The colors are unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, and look, let's face it, that's where a lot of these tropical fish people buy in the stores come from, these places.
Yeah, all those saltwater fish, definitely. You know, we saw, like, little clownfish, like Disney's Nemo, inside of the sea anemones, you know. And, of course, Bill, I told him, hey, clownfish, tell me a joke.
Awesome, man, awesome.
And a bunch of big stingrays, too. Saw some stingrays that were, like, 4 feet across, just these monsters.
Now, were they stingrays or just rays?
We saw some manta rays and we saw some big stingrays.
Wow.
Kind of those blue-gray ones.
Yeah.
You could see the barb on their tail, but, you know, they say they don't really bother you unless you step on them.
You'll get too close.
Yeah, well, and they were saying, like, I asked one of the guys there that seemed pretty knowledgeable on one of the islands, and I said, well, look at, like, Steve Irwin, though, right, the crocodile hunter.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, but don't forget, like, you know, Steve Irwin used to wrestle with crocodiles, and he used to wrestle with stingrays, too, you know, so.
Boy, oh, boy.
Not like that thing sought him out and
poked
him.
Yeah, he aggravated it, and unfortunately, the end came, you know.
Yeah, very much unfortunate.
It's like playing with the freaking a water moccasin, you know. Not a good idea, you know.
No, and like the shark, you know, like the guys were these local Polynesian guys when we were swimming with the sharks. They were like, yeah, just don't touch them. They won't touch you, you know.
It's funny how they would come right up on you, though, to get a dead-on view of you, you know.
I'll tell you what, the first one, Bill, like first time I'm in the water with my snorkel and mask, and, you know, it's about 8 feet deep or something, and four of them are coming right at me.
Wow.
You know.
Just like, who are you?
Hey, what's going on? And they swim right up to your mask and turn away or swim under your, you know. I mean, they're sneaky. I mean, the people that go swimming with these great whites, you know, these predators, they're nuts.
Yeah, they are nuts because
this thing could easily come and bitten me, you know, but these particular sharks aren't interested
in,
you know.
Yeah, you talk about stealth. They got stealth.
Holy mackerel.
You know, they can move quick when they want to. They can just drift along and lull you into a false sense of safety or security. And then, but when it's time for the move, they can go and they can go fast.
Well, and they're just always cruising.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I don't know how fast they're going on when they're just on cruise control, but it's probably like 6 or 7 miles an hour as they're cruising mm-hmm. along and always looking. And then now, of course, they're finding like their sensory abilities, you know, and different by species. But I was reading about the tiger sharks a couple of weeks ago, and they're saying how their sense of smell and you know, a bit like radar in their nose, mm-hmm. how they can tell when there's movement, and they can sense and smell stuff from miles away. You know, just amazing.
Magnificent creation.
Yep.
So, my friend, super what do we cool. have in our cryptids in the news today?
Well, we are going into the water, but we're going to go into the fresh water.
All right.
Some cold, dark fresh water, unlike the warm, clear salt water that I was in. We're going to talk about the Loch Ness Monster again. This story came up where this woman, one of our listeners sent it in, Bill, I think you saw it, where this woman got some new pictures of the Loch Ness Monster. Now, she got them a few years back, but it's interesting. She was afraid to publish them.
Mm-hmm.
Did you happen to see these photos?
I did, and thanks to our listener, Rob, from up in British Columbia, who opened my eyes to this, and of course, I passed it on to you.
Yeah. But so I think there's a couple of aspects here that are interesting. First, of course, the pictures, which we'll talk about. And then second, that this photographer woman, she took these pictures in 2018, but kept them to herself for fear of public ridicule.
Yeah. And where have you heard that before?
I know.
You know, this ridicule thing is real. It's palpable. Oh, it's tangible. And many, many people have something they've seen or experienced who just are scared to share it.
Yeah.
And it's a weird thing, but, you know, people are, it's like being shy, right? You like somebody, but you just can't get out of the box to express your feelings, you know? Yep. And this is the same thing. It's that fear of rejection, fear of ridicule, and the same thing happened with this woman. But finally, when she broke out of the shell, she was honest enough to tell the truth.
Yeah. And yeah, so these photos are basically, you know, it looks like some kind of smooth-skinned creature, like not a furry creature. And there are these bumps sticking out of the water from a distance, and then a wake, a pretty large wake, all around it. And she says that, like, it was kind of like, you know, the water was spinning and rolling. And she said, we never saw a head or neck. And after a few minutes, so it was going on for a few minutes, allowing her to get her camera out and take some pictures, etc. Then it just disappeared and it didn't come back.
Right. Now, it's funny because that one picture, you could see the upper, like, two-thirds of a head perfectly. Did you see that one shot?
I did. It looks like you can almost see an eye.
Absolutely.
Right?
It looks like the head of a brontosaurus.
Yeah, but it's right, folks. It's right at the surface of the water.
Yeah.
So, you know, it could be something else. Like, it's not the classic Nessie picture where it's sticking its head up 6 feet above the mm-hmm. water. It's kind of right at the surface, more like you'd see an alligator or something
like that. I said that to Rob. I said, Rob, it's similar in appearance to a gator on the surface. But, of course, yep. the head shape was much different than that.
Much different,
but
yeah.
The same thing, like half of the beak or nose, whatever you want to call the front part, and then the top of the head rising up above that. And then that beautiful circular eyeball that seems to be reflecting some kind of light or something.
I was going to say, it's kind of shining white, like it's reflecting something.
Yeah, really remarkable. Now, what did she say? She went to that some type of notable investigator to share it with him first?
Yeah, I think so. So there's this guy up there that, you know, and of course he gets criticized a lot because he kind of quit his job, sold his house, you know, years back, and is living on the edge of the lake in like a camper trying to find Nessie, you know.
Uh-huh.
So, and he had real positive things to say about the picture, that it was the best picture he's ever seen, you know, in modern day and stuff like that. Mm-hmm.
I wonder what this guy is doing for a buck living on the side of the lake.
Nothing. That's it. Like, he kind of retired. His name is Feltham, mm-hmm. His last name. And he says, you know, these are the most exciting surface pictures of Nessie I have seen. They are exactly the type of pictures I've been waiting to take for 3 decades. It's rare to see something so clear on the surface.
Amazing, huh?
Yeah.
There is definitely something in that lake, at least.
I think so. You know, it's so deep, and it's more than one thing, of course. You know, these things don't reproduce on their own.
Right.
But it's like Champ, you know, up in Lake Champlain.
That's right.
In Vermont, upstate New York. I mean, some of these really deep water lakes that were once connected to other seas, you know, it's very likely that they have other species of creature in them. that you never see, because unlike those waters I was talking about where I was swimming with the sharks, they're not clear. You know, they're murky. Mm-hmm. You can't see anything. You can barely see your hand in front of your face sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm just looking in here, and I don't have it available, and I won't make the listeners wait. Rob from BC, it's funny because he and his wife had a sighting of a lake monster up in his neck of the woods.
Okay.
And that was going back, Rob, forgive me, but I want to say 6 or 7 years ago up there, they had a sighting of a creature. And he's a very astute gentleman, transplant from Great Britain, sharp as a tack. He's on the go. He's looking. He's got eyes. He sees. He hears. He saw this thing, and he said, Bill, I'm telling you, this is no eel. This is no sturgeon. This is some type of lake monster, and whatever it is, I don't know, but I know what I saw.
Yeah, and I covered that one cryptid up there in British Columbia. I forget. It's named after the lake that it's in.
It's a funny name, like Ojiabi or something.
I was going to say Okeechobee or something like that.
I was trying to look through my phone while you were talking because Rob had sent me the name in conversation, and I just can't dig it up without being a nuisance. So
yeah, but I covered that one, you know, going back a couple of years, and also know somebody that lives up on that lake, but he didn't want to talk about it.
Yeah, unbelievable. And so here you are. Here's Rob, an eyewitness of what you were covering.
Yeah.
So people are seeing things. And by the way, folks, we always say this. If you've seen something, say something. Go to our BigfootTerrorInTheWoods.com, our webpage, hit the contact link, and reach out, and we will have a conversation.
No doubt about it.
That is awesome, Kev. I mean,
So that's it, Bill. A little bit of talk about Bora Bora and Mo'orea.
Yeah.
And then, of course, this more recent sighting and photographs of the Loch Ness Monster.
Yeah, and before I get into this, Kev, we're going to get the creep on here, and we're going to get on the creep heavy.
All right.
Before I do that, I want to tell new listeners and other people out there who've been around for a while, I rarely read criticisms or praise on the books that are up on Amazon. And the other day I tipped in and I read a couple. And one person gave me 3 stars for volume 11. They said, not as good as the others. Some of the people didn't even see a Bigfoot. That was the comment. Now, I just want to be square with everybody and with that person who probably can't fill out a Christmas card. In my books, I receive a lot of information. I put in there what I'm told, whether it's evidential findings, things that you may read as I have that suggest it was a Bigfoot, such as tracks, structures, strange going on that I all believe lead to one conclusion that it was a Bigfoot. So you're going to find things like that in all of my books. And if you think of how elusive sightings of this creature are and how elusive they are, be grateful that there are people out there gathering this stuff and putting it together rather than being critical of what's being done, because unless you're doing the work, you don't have a dog in this fight. So I spent my last 4 days off working entirely on books and 3 night sessions in the studio recording. So when you go out, purchase a book, an audio book, enjoy it, leave me 5 stars, or don't bother buying it.
No, and Bill, it's like, you know, you're covering all different kinds of
accounts. That's right.
So someone's saying some don't really have Bigfoot. Well, that's how some of them right. are.
And do you think for 1 minute, Kev, I'm going to get a Dogman account and I'm not going to include it in a volume, Bigfoot Terror in the Woods, Sightings and Encounters?
You better put the
I'm
dog
just
man
saying.
In.
You know.
And by the way, it includes Pigman, too.
Pigman. I mean, so I don't want somebody saying, oh, this guy's talking about Bigfoot, but he's got a Dogman account in there. Do me a favor.
By the way, on the lighter side, Bill, I wasn't going to bring it up, but when I was traveling, I downloaded a bunch of Seinfeld episodes on my iPad, and I watched. I didn't even know it was coming up, but it was the Pigman episode.
In the hospital?
Where Kramer accidentally comes across the Pigman in the hospital. I'm telling you, folks, if you haven't seen that one, I was laughing out loud on the plane. Yeah. And people around me were looking at me more than they normally look at me.
Awesome. Awesome, Pigman. All right, folks. Here it comes. Tell the children to leave the room. This following harrowing account was told to me by Tammy Schneider, a resident of the state of Virginia. Here is what may be the creepiest thing that I have ever heard in my lifetime. For starters, Bill, what I am about to tell both you and your readers was handed down in my family for many generations. The woman in this account was my great-great-great-grandmother, and her name was Gretchen Schneider. Both she and her husband had come from Germany to America in the hope of creating a new life for themselves, as did many others at that time in our country's history. It was told to us as young children that Gretchen had a certain fancy for the occult, and in actuality, what I am speaking about is witchcraft in the worst sense of the word. Unfortunately, as things go, many in our family through the years have blamed her for delving into this dark practice as being the cause of deaths and strange mishaps regarding many of our relatives, which is a story for another day in and of itself. It was said of Gretchen that both she and her husband had found themselves steeped within what was then a very puritanical New England community. And with her being a witch and unwilling to let it go, the two of them had moved to the Ozark Mountains to begin again, so to speak, to not be surrounded by or under the threat of what was a very religious region of the country. They had moved into the hill country of the Ozarks and built a two-room cabin. At the time, although sparsely populated, there was apparently all types of illegal activities going on there, including, as we know, the production of alcohol, with everyone turning a blind eye to the other's activities. Gretchen's daughter was the one who began the passing of this tale down through the family after the death of her mother, which happened in the following fashion. Tighten your seatbelts, folks. The story goes that Gretchen, after many years, had become well acquainted with the area's shiners, that's moonshiners, as well as many other illegal activists, and they were acquainted with her witchcraft. Apparently, she had convinced them that she could provide protection for them and their activities by invoking or conjuring up what she called familiars. Now, her daughter, whose name was Beth Ann, at the time was under 10 years of age, and she had been a witness to her mother's conjuring of what she believed to be evil entities. She described what she believed to be an altar of some kind in the corner of their small cabin, upon which sat beeswax candles and some strange figures, as well as some handmade straw dolls in the images of men and women in the area. Her mother would go into what Beth Ann said was a trance, mumbling and speaking strange phrases and words from some type of weird book, after she would blow the candles out and come back to reality. Over the course of time, Beth Ann became increasingly afraid of both her mother and the cabin, as her mother was having regular meetings, as she called them, with other locals in the woods. These were meetings which Beth Ann and her siblings were not allowed to be a part of, not that she wanted to anyway. She had shared that when her mother came back from these meetings that she seemed to have changed for the worse, and you couldn't talk to her. She would become very dark and angry with everyone. The cabin had also become, as she said, haunted. There were regularly clawing and scratching sounds on the wood, and her mother would speak to these unseen things by name, telling them to speak when they are spoken to and to get away from the house until she summoned them. It was several years later that they began to see strange creatures in the woods around the cabin, such as a large cat with horns on its head, and something that looked like a ram with long fangs sticking out of its mouth that growled whenever they saw it. On the eve of October 31st, Gretchen said she had some special work to do and wanted to be left alone. She was sitting in a rocker facing a candle that was burning in front of a small mirror on a table, and started chanting some name over and over again. After about an hour, a loud roaring howl began to emanate from what sounded to be near to the cabin. So loud was it that the children hid in the corner, huddling together, wrapped in blankets, hoping for it to end. When it finally did stop, her mother rose to her feet saying, "He's here now," and rose to her feet, heading for the door. Her very last words were, "I must go out and greet him." As the door closed, the children heard her talking, which was followed by what she said was a snarling and a loud growling coming from just in front of the cabin. Beth Ann was the only one to sneak near to the window, where, peering through the corner in the moonlight, she saw what she described as a giant hair-covered monster towering over her diminutive mother. Thinking that she had been seen and being frightened to death of what she had just viewed, she backed away from the glass, retreating to her siblings in the corner. Her father, being the stern and quiet German, never said a word about his wife's activities for whatever reason, and he sat in the chair smoking his pipe while the children cowered in the corner of the cabin. Moments later, there were shrieks of terror coming from outside, coming from her mother, with a loud lion-like roar snuffing them from hearing. And then all went quiet. Not another sound was heard, not so much as a peep. Her father rose from the chair and, walking over to the children, gathered them together like a shepherd would his sheep, saying to them, "I think it's all over now." They never looked for their mother, with the father going out in the morning and coming right back in. He never uttered another word about it for the rest of his life, and they had packed the wagon, moving to Virginia just 2 weeks after this happened. Beth Ann had said that what she saw that night in the moonlight dwarfed her mother as she stood before it. Twice her height and more than likely 10 times her weight. Looking at what she described as being a giant, hair-covered caveman. Beth Ann also said that she believed her father knew that what her mother had been involved in would not come to a good end, but had stood by his wife hoping for the best, which didn't come. Some 3 years later, he had remarried, telling his new bride that his wife had been killed in an animal attack and was never seen again. And that is how it all ended. If that ain't creep, I don't know what is.
Bill, that's like the creepiest account I think you've ever covered.
I mean, and what do you think was being described there? Loud howling? Giant hair-covered caveman? Mm-hmm. Growling? Disappearing mother? Crazy conjuring? I don't know, man. You know, that's why, you know, we believe there's a couple of things going on here, right? You know, one kind of leans in one direction, one kind of leans in the other direction, you know? You know how I feel about this stuff. Stuff just doesn't disappear that's flesh and blood, you know?
No, that's a whole demonic thing. I mean, clearly she was in that world, right?
And this thing shows up.
Yeah.
So
careful what you call for.
Yeah, you know. Be careful what you ask for.
Right.
And in this case, as the story goes, the father, as this Beth Ann had passed it on, was kind of quiet. I guess just kind of putting up with it. I can only imagine, you know, but, you know, they were obviously in over their heads, you know, and had moved from one area to another where they could supposedly practice freely what they wanted to. And they were around some, you know, quote, criminal elements anyway, who kind of turned the other cheek, you know. So, that is one of the creepiest things I have ever spoken about on the podcast, you know. And
I am with you there, man. That was like pretty chilly. A little spine tingling for me, at least.
Yeah, and talk.
I don't like that demonic stuff.
Yeah, so. I don't like it either. But, you know, it's good to expose. I'm interested in exposing the enemy and his tactics, and you're best steering clear of that if you know what's good for you.
Yeah.
So
agree. Yeah.
So there you have it, Kev. Incredible nutso account. A little Loch Ness monster. A little Bora Bora.
Well, you promised to get the creep on. You got some demonic Bigfoot condom.
Yeah, and that's right in there with the black-eyed children and all of that nonsense.
Oh, I don't know about that, Bill.
Yeah. We're here selling Girl Scout cookies.
I just wanted to use your telephone.
How about I wrap the cord around your neck, you little creep?
Just let me in for a minute.
Oh, that's right. Telephones don't have cords anymore. I can't wrap it around your neck.
That's right. That's right.
Although, Kev, I still have one hanging in the kitchen. Works just fine.
Wow.
Ah. So, my friend, what do we have in our listener mail this fine day?
Yeah, we got some good listener mail this week. First one comes in from Heather. And Heather writes, I want to thank you for your podcast. You have a vibe about you that makes me feel like I'm with family and friends when I press play on each new episode. Whoa. It's a great comfort to me right now as life is hard in my own little family. I also greatly appreciate that you're not afraid to talk about God and your faith. So first off, I got to interject that, of course, we have to talk about that when my brother's talking about conjuring up demons.
Yeah. I'm on the other side of the battle, folks. Make no doubt about that.
I know. And she says, Bill, I was raised a Catholic and even attended a Catholic school from kindergarten through eighth grade. I lost my connection with God somewhere in the turbulent process of growing up. During the many difficulties of 2020, including a child in a residential treatment facility at 14 years old, God called me back to himself. Wow. He was what got me through that difficult time and has sustained me since. Every day, I feel I grow in my own faith, and I know I can depend on him when the days are difficult. Mm. Lastly, I heard about a Bigfoot creature called Nobby from the Knob Creek area of North Carolina, and I thought Kevin might like to look into it, with it being a North Kakalaki cryptid. Your show has touched me, and I'm sure others, in ways I don't think you or I could have possibly fathom. Thanks, Heather. Well, good stuff, Heather, and thanks for the tip on Nobby. I have heard of Nobby. I don't think I've covered Nobby in this podcast, though, so maybe we'll be talking about good old Nobby in the coming
and
months.
And, folks, that is a legitimate email coming in from one of our listeners.
Well, Bill, they're all legit.
Yeah, and we don't filter anything. Of course, if you're cussing in there and whatnot, that's getting filtered.
I was going to say, we do filter a little bit.
You know, but that's coming in, and that's some real raw honesty right there, and we air it. So thanks, Heather, and I really appreciate that, especially being the person that I am. So God bless you. And by the way, happy Easter to everybody out there.
That's right. Happy Easter. Yeah.
What else, Kev?
All right. And our last email comes in from Mark. Okay. And the subject is called The Battle of Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And he says, Kevin, have you ever heard of the Battle of Los Angeles? It's rumored to be a battle of military and UFOs over Los Angeles in 1942. I think. It was said to be witnessed by many. I don't know all the details, but it sounds interesting. Mm-hmm. Maybe you might know more about it. Love the show. You and Bill are great. And I have heard of it, Mark. And I can't, you know, when I looked at it last time around and, you know, I looked at it again this time around, I can't tell what was actually going on. You know, it was right after the war. And, of course, there was a lot of fear going on at that time. Some of the dates are when this happened are in February of 1942, which would be during the war and after Pearl Harbor. So I don't know what to make of it. I don't know, Bill. Did you ever hear of that?
Oh, yeah. And my understanding of it was that it couldn't have been after the war because it was said that they believed it might have been after Pearl Harbor, it might have been additional Japanese air assault and on the West Coast.
Right, that makes perfect
sense.
Now,
the other thing is, too, though, Kev, and this is fact, these boys out there unloaded a pile of shells into the sky that night, firing at something that couldn't be knocked down.
Right.
Apparently, this object was stationary while they were rattling off firepower that would have blown anything into powder, and it didn't happen.
Right.
So it's a real odd thing. Every once in a while, it gets kicked around, the Battle of Los Angeles. But what happened that night, man, I don't know. You know, and it's like everything else, though, Kev. We always think that, or we wish that Big Brother would come clean, right? But they don't, and they didn't then either, especially back then. And we know what happened at Roswell and everything else since then. Everything is in the shadows, you know. There's no, there's no forthrightness or putting stuff into print that is truthful. So we're left in the dark a little bit, but that was an amazing tale. And it's an interesting email, and I understand why he has interest in it, is asking questions, you know?
Yep. No, good stuff.
You know, folks, we always, when I say we, some of us, and some of you, like to think that everybody is up to speed with everything you know. But there are people out there who don't even know what we're talking about when we talk about the Patterson-Gimlin film. Well, what's that, you know? I'm going to be 66 years old. You got people out there that are 16, 26. They're not necessarily familiar with Kevin seeing the Patterson-Gimlin show with Leonard Nimoy, right, Kev?
In search of. Yeah, no, and we don't expect them to, Bill. This is for beginners or experts, and I'm not an expert by any means. Right. So
we're just presenting data flow to the audience.
An interesting take on some of the data out there.
Right. And I got an email. I didn't forward this email to you, Kev. This was weeks and weeks ago. It's not the first time this happened. Some joker says to me, "What makes you an expert, WJ?" You know, like, come on, man. If you listen to the podcast, you know I say all the time, I am no expert. I'm simply presenting you, and I give my opinion. If you don't like my opinion, well, you're entitled to that. So we're presenting stuff. We're talking about stuff. And, you know, you could believe it. You could take it with a grain of salt, or you could throw it in the trash.
Chuck it. It's okay. You
know, it's okay, you know.
We're not mad at you.
We're not mad at you.
Hopefully we're entertaining you a little bit.
But remember, this is what keeps people from speaking. It's when you speak that somebody is going to say something nasty about you. And that keeps people in the shadows from coming forward with experiences and things that have happened to them relative to Loch Ness, spooks, weird goings on, Bigfoot, animals being taken from their farm. You know, Kev, the perfect example, Skinwalker Ranch.
Ooh.
I mean, you have a cornucopia of creep going on over there.
A cornucopia of creep.
It's
I like
just
that,
like
Bill.
A basket shaped like a cone on your Thanksgiving table. And it's just filled with creep.
With different conjuring coming out of it.
Yeah, just nastiness. You know, you go, oh, is there any fruit in there? And you put your hand in and something bites you.
Perfect.
But you think about it, what's going on out there? UFOs, skinwalkers, Bigfoot, orbs of light, magnetic anomalies, people getting sick walking onto the land. I mean, footprints in the mud. You know, you just can't make it up. Is it all baloney? No. Absolutely not. You know, what it is, you may not have an explanation for it. But there is some weird... Kev, all of those reports you've been doing on Transylvania. I mean, come on, with that chapel over that cave up on the hillside and the painting of St. Michael over it and the reports going back of things flying out of the cave before that was built. I mean, it's got to be something going on. They wouldn't do that. You know, you wouldn't waste the time or the effort.
Right.
Bizarre, man. Wow. What a show, man.
Good stuff. All right, folks. Well, thank you for listening. Please give us a 5-star review if you haven't lately. And we will talk to you soon.
Yeah. And, folks, by the way, once again, happy Easter. Are we going to launch this tonight, Kev?
Yeah, this will be out on Easter.
Okay, good. So happy Easter to everybody. And remember, folks, if you should be walking around in the woods in the Ozarks alone and unarmed, you best remember one thing, my friends. Always carry more gun than you think you're going to need. Sleep tight.